This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an opera about a legendary prize fighter, a jazz funeral for a clown, or an evening with a Broadway star, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Multi-Grammy-winning jazz trumpeter, composer, and New Orleans native son, Terrence Blanchard tells the compelling story of famed prize fighter Emil Griffith in Champion, an opera in jazz. The work premiered in 2013 in St. Louis and is making its local debut with the New Orleans Opera Association. Champion is the first New Orleans opera production by a composer of color. Terrence, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hey, how are you?
This opera is a first for you, the New Orleans Opera Association, and audiences who may not be familiar with the champion, boxer Emil Griffith. How did it come to be?
Well, there were discussions with Opera Theater St. Louis a number of years ago where they had talked about bridging the gap between opera and jazz and thought that it was a natural fit. The guy who runs Jazz St. Louis, Gene Dobbs Bradford, had a conversation with me years ago that he remembered. We were talking about our parents, and I said, well, you know, my father always loved opera, and I heard opera in the house. So when the conversation started between the two organizations, he kept saying, well, I have the perfect person to do this. And they approached me. Jim Robinson, who's the director of Champion, met me in New York. I'll never forget it, because when he asked me if I wanted to write an opera, I thought he was crazy. I thought he lost his mind. But the opportunity was a very intriguing one. I couldn't have done it with a better group of people. They made me feel comfortable. We threw away all of the stigma about what opera is and what it should be and all of that stuff. And we just got down to work.
Now, who is Emil Griffith?
Emil Griffith was a reluctant champion. You know, he was a guy from the islands down in St. Thomas. His mother had seven kids. They were all kind of dispersed all over the world. He wound up in America, and there was a trainer who saw him and saw his physical attributes and said, listen, man, you ever thought about boxing? And he didn't really get it at first. But once he got into it, his physical talent was so great that he was having his first professional fight within months, which is really unheard of, because it takes years just for people to learn how to stand up straight to keep your balance, you know? But the thing I think is the most important about him is he's a guy who was always struggling with his sexuality and suffered because of it. You know, he fought a guy by the name of Benny Perrette. They had two fights prior to the third one, where each one of them had won a fight. So in the press conference leading up to the third one, you know, Benny was trying to get a little bit of an edge. So he used a derogatory term for gay males in the press conference, outing Emil. And Emil didn't know how to handle it. He was very upset. But come fight time, Emil had a bad premonition about the fight. And Benny Perrette had fought a guy by the name of Gene Fulmer, who was a really hard-hitting puncher. And he hurt Benny. And that was 2 months prior to the fight with Emil, which is unheard of today. You know, that would never happen. So Benny shouldn't have been in the fight. And when Emil got into the fight, there's a moment in the fight where Benny backs up into the corner and Emil just hits him 17 times. And Benny falls into a coma, never regains consciousness, laid in a coma for 10 days, and then passed away. Emil was devastated because a lot of people don't know that they were friends. Emil tried to see him in the hospital. The family wouldn't let him in. And it took a toll on him to the point where he couldn't really fight much, even though he had to fight. He went through a moment in time where he was beaten up coming out of a gay bar, almost was killed. And then he fell in love with a guy, with a young man at a correctional facility that he was working at. The most important thing about this entire story is that the story is about redemption. And it's about Emil trying to forgive himself, first of all. So in real life, there's a moment in time, and there's a documentary that you can watch called Ring of Fire, where Emil is going to meet Benny Perrette Jr. decades after the incident in Central Park, and Emil is suffering with dementia by this point. And his lover, who is actually his adopted son, because they weren't allowed to marry back then, Luis, is the one who's getting him prepared to go. The entire opera is based on that moment. and how we reflect on his life while he's preparing to get to the park to meet Benny Jr. And there's a moment near the end of the opera where he finally sees Benny Jr. And Benny says, you know, we just want to let you know we don't harbor any ill will towards you. And Emil just loses it. And you can tell that he'd been carrying this burden of killing his friend for years. But there's one line in his autobiography that's so important to the entire story. And it's the reason why I chose this story. There's a book called 9, 10, and Out, which is about his life. And in the book, he says, you know, I killed the man and the world forgave me, yet I love the man and the world wants to kill me. Oh. And I think that's a very powerful statement. Unfortunately, still a very relevant statement. To me, the entire opera is about him dealing with that issue.
Now, the subtitle, An Opera in Jazz, is curious to me. What does opera in jazz mean?
We didn't want to use the term jazz opera because we didn't want people to think that they were going to come by and hear, like, swing for the entire performance, because that's not it. I'm using the language of jazz. There's a jazz rhythm section, piano, bass, guitar, and drums, that resides inside the orchestra, but there are many moments in time where they don't play at all. So we didn't want to be misleading.
Now, tell us about the libretto by Michael Christopher.
Michael Christopher, he's an actor, he's a writer, and a director. We had worked together before on a couple of projects. I love his writing style. It's very poetic, very thoughtful. And we had a lot of conversation about trying to humanize Emil. So we have three Emils, actually, in the opera. We have Arthur Woodley, who's going to play the older Emil, who's suffering from dementia. Aubrey Ellicott, who plays the fighter. And then we're going to have a young kid here, whose name I don't have just yet, who's going to play Emil as a kid. That was Michael's idea. The beautiful thing about it is that the older Emil is basically on stage the entire time, just witnessing his own life and actually having moments of affection for his younger self. That's really beautiful at times.
Can you tell us who else is in the cast?
Karen Schlock is going to play the female lead. She is phenomenal. Then we have Victor Robinson. He's going to play Benny Perrette. He's a great tenor. I'm excited about the response that people will have. Karen Schlock is stunning when she sings. When she sang in San Francisco, she had two arias, and she got standing ovations on both of them every night. I'll just let that resonate.
Jazz trumpeter and composer Terrence Blanchard, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
The New Orleans Opera Association will produce and perform Terrence Blanchard's Champion, an opera in jazz, next weekend, March 9th and 11th, at the Mahalia Jackson Theater. This weekend, Cirque du Soleil is opening a show in New Orleans, and it seems tailor-made for a city known for celebrations of life. WWNO's Eileen Fleming spoke with Mark Schaub about a new production of Corteo.
Could you tell me exactly what do you do as artistic director? The whole show is artistic.
I'm responsible for looking after the quality of the show. I did not create the show, but this is my third time with Corteo. I was there in 2005 in the beginning for the creation. I came back in 2015 for the last year of the Big Top Tour, and now I'm back for this remount and to take the show on the road. But my job is to make sure that as the show evolves and grows, we still respect the artistic concepts that went into the show. And over the life of a tour, artists will change, we'll have different performers coming in, and while it's really beautiful to let the show grow and absorb these performers and take what they bring and see how that affects the show, we need to do that within a certain respect and guidelines of what the show was originally created for. So that's my responsibility. Also to look after and manage the artists' activity during the day, their training, their rehearsals, that I look after the coaches, the PMED department, and the stage management department. The crew, the technical crew, the people that support the tour, it's all about the show. And having that kind of single purpose can really unify people from very, very different backgrounds. And that's what Cirque du Soleil is. I mean, each of our shows is very, very mixed in the people that make it up and make it run.
Give us an overview of what Corteo means and what's the design of the show.
Corteo was created by Daniele Finzipasca. He's an Italian-Swiss theater circus director. And he wanted to do a show based around a central character. This central character we refer to as the Dreamer Clown. And he is experiencing, whether in a dream state or whether in his own deathbed, his funeral. He's there. And what we see in this funeral is a procession of his life in the circus passing by him. And Corteo is a variation of the word cortege, which is a funeral procession. But we don't know if he's really dreaming this or is he actually experiencing it. But the show's not really about this clown's death. It's about his life. And it's about a celebration of that life and all the characters and people that he experienced through his life in the circus are all coming through Corteo at one time or another, and several of the central characters are coming back several times. So we get a sense of the kind of chaotic beauty of the Dreamer Clown's life in the circus.
This sounds familiar in New Orleans to our second lines. Is that a reason that the company decided to do the arena show premiere here?
Well, I think it's one of those just sort of very, very happy coincidences. The tour was planned a long time ago. We had some delays, but we kept the bookings that we did have. And it turned out we end up doing the world premiere in New Orleans. And I think it is kind of fitting, and it's exciting to come to a city that has that kind of tradition, that kind of culture, that type of celebration of the passing and the celebration of life. And to be doing our show there, this new version of it for the first time, we're very happy to be here. Let's just put it that way.
I understand there is a presentation that has a definite New Orleans flair. Tell us about that.
Since Corteo is about a funeral procession, we thought it would be a great idea to do a procession-type parade, a second line here in New Orleans before the show opens, to kind of announce to New Orleans and to the world that Corteo is back on the road. And just to get the word out there. So we'll have several of the artists from the show in full costume, makeup, with a lot of their instruments and props, and we'll be parading around Jackson Square on Wednesday, the 28th of February.
This is a revival of a show that was done in the tent, and now it's in an arena. So for anyone who has seen the first show, what's the difference? What will they notice?
Well, it did tour in the Big Top for 10 years. Corteo was created in 2005. And one thing we have had to do to get it into an arena format is to shorten the show a bit. So we've done some editing. We've added two new acts and removed a couple of the older ones. And technically, it's a whole new, different setup, because a Big Top show takes roughly 6 or 7 days to set up in a new city, and then it runs for several weeks, sometimes 3 months or so. And then we have about 3 or 4 or 5 days to take it down. An arena we need to be able to set up in minimum 8 to 12 hours, and to tear down in 3 to 4 hours. So technically we've had to really rethink the stage completely and the technology of it.
Mark Schaub, Artistic Director of Corteo for Cirque du Soleil. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Corteo will be performed Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Smoothie King Arena. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Across town, Broadway star Melissa Errico is making her New Orleans debut with a special Broadway at NOCA concert, Sondheim and More. The Tony Award nominee will be joined by Native Son and star of Mad Men, Brian Batt. Erica is currently making her solo concert debut in London, which is where we caught up with her by phone. Hello, Melissa.
Hello.
How are things across the pond?
It's enchanting. My hotel is cute. I'm in Soho, and I'm going to try to go off and see some pre-Raphaelite paintings, as you do in London, before dinner.
You're making your debut in London, your solo debut. How is the show being received?
You know, they love Sondheim in London. They have their own feelings about Sondheim, so right away it felt like we were all at Stonehenge together, sort of worshiping the same spirit. It was off the charts, exciting.
You are bringing your gift of song to New Orleans as we celebrate our 300th anniversary. What excites you about your debut in New Orleans?
It's a place of great energy and music and lovely people, so I'm just so excited to get invited to come.
Let's talk a little about your career. Broadway star, film and television actress, recording and concert artist. How did it all begin?
Well, it all began when I was a gymnast. I was about 12 years old, and my knee didn't feel good one summer. And I was getting very tall and curly hair and kind of shapely for a gymnast. And my mother had the good sense to pull me out of a training place where I was spending all my summers. And she popped me into a theater camp. And I think she knew that I always had a love of music and theater. I had already seen a bunch of musicals and plays and loved them. So the summer camp was amazing. And that fall, she took me to see On Your Toes. And that really cemented a fascination with musicals. It was a Rodgers and Hart musical. It had a lot of dancing, a lot of very physical people and people who could do high kicks and cartwheels. But then there was the delicious jazzy music, the lyrics of Lawrence Hart. And I saw there was another world out there. So musical theater has been an amazing gift that my mother opened up to me.
Did you grow up in a musical family?
There was always music in the house. My father was a concert pianist and met my mother. He was playing the piano at a college party, and she came up to him, and he was a Yale student. But the conditions of my parents' life growing up in the 50s was to be afraid of a full-time life as an artist. So my father went to medical school and made more practical decisions. And my mother's a sculptor and a painter, but for financial reasons, she buckled down and took care of the family. But there was always art and always music, but it was never something that my family felt that they could pursue. So I think they were very happy to create a world where it was possible for us, my brother and myself and my sister, to pursue. And going back a generation, my family came over from Italy with artistic aspirations. So there were all these artists that never quite happened. I had all these frustrated, sort of passionate, interesting Italians around me, but I think they're really delighted that I went off and did it, you know. But I do feel the history of all their longings to be artists as well.
And where did you grow up?
I was born in Manhattan and then grew up on Long Island.
You have starred in a variety of Broadway musicals, My Fair Lady, High Society, Anna Karenina, Dracula, to name a few. Which provided the most memories for you?
I think I'd have to say Michel Legrand's musical Amour. Michel Legrand wrote a lot of the great songs for Barbra Streisand. He wrote the movie Yentl. In his 70s, he finally wrote his first Broadway musical called Amour, and it was a very delicate show. It was written and directed by James Lapine, who wrote many of Sondheim's great musicals. And Amour didn't last very long on Broadway. It was a couple of months. But I'm very proud of the cast album, and I'm very proud of my association to Michel Legrand. I've made an album with him, and I recently released a single called Hurry Home.
Remember days, remember nights, when all we ever needed was each other, with looks reserved for...
So my association to this wonderful film composer is one of the pride and joys of my life, other than my passion to sing Sondheim's music. I think those are the things that have touched my life most.
And what is your connection with Stephen Sondheim?
I would consider him my greatest mentor, both for the appreciation of his work and the boundlessness of what I have to learn about it, and also the fact that he's taken the time to get to know me as a person and to encourage me.
So tell us, how do you make a song your own?
Like with romance, there's a chemical thing that happens. You feel something for the song. You make it your own by understanding it and then figuring out, why does that message matter to you?
Now, your career is enjoying a second life as you stopped for a while and put family first. Now that you've put your showbiz hat back on, how were the kids and your hubby, tennis player and sports commentator Pat McEnroe, reacting?
My children actually benefit. I'm seeing a parallel growth in the house. The more that I do what I want to do, and even if it's auditions and I don't get the part, if my attitude is good and I keep trying, it's empowering the girls to do the same in their life. And they want me to do well, and they want me to enjoy myself.
What will you perform in New Orleans?
I will sing all kinds of theater music where people can enjoy one era and another. I want to sing some of my Michel Legrand film music with you. Brian Batt and I are prepared to sing from Finian's Rainbow, Old Devil Moon, and we're going to sing from West Side Story and from Kiss Me, Kate. And I think Sondheim-wise, I have some fun songs about marriage. Even though Mr. Sondheim was never married himself, he's written some of the funniest music about relationships. No one can get their relationships quite straight, and he was quite honest about that.
It sounds like it's going to be a great experience.
We're going to have a great time. I've rented a beautiful dress, so... I'm never going to give away my fashion treats, but everyone always gets something nice when they come.
Broadway star Melissa Errico, thanks so much.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
How are things in Glacamora? Is that little brook still leaping there? Does it still run down to Donnycove through Killybegs, Kilkerry and Kildare? How are things in Glacamora? Is that willow tree still weeping there?
Mark Cortali presents Broadway at NOCA with Melissa Errico in Sondheim and More. She will be joined by special guest Brian Batt and accompanied by John McDaniel at the piano. Thursday evening, 7:30 at NOCA, 2800 Charter Street. More info online at BroadwayNOLA.com. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.